Good morning. We're now at 8:33. Welcome into our monthly visit with Congressman Blaine Luchtmeyer. How are you doing this morning, sir?
Fantastic, Bob. Great to be with you again.
All right. Did you get back home for the weekend, or are you still in Washington?
Well, I got back home yesterday evening, and glad to be back home. I'll be back on the road a little bit today, but we've got a couple interviews like this morning, and glad to be able to talk to you and all the great folks and be able to get some messaging out about what is going on.
All right. Again, if you've got a phone call, a question for the congressman, 263-2424 or 800-892-2300. The first news that just came out within the hour, 196,000 jobs added in the March. That's a pretty good number, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think it shows that the economy is still growing, that it's still, producing jobs, that when you see those numbers start to tail off, get down, in the 10 to 50,000 range, that tells you that we're headed the wrong direction. But, this economy continues to cruise along. I've had the opportunity, because of my seniority there in Congress, to be able to be involved in a lot of discussions with people like Larry Kudlow, who is chief economic advisor for the president. And he is just ecstatic about how the economy is growing, how it's going to continue to grow. And, the president's working on these trade deals, and he gets those knocked out. That's just going to set in place, I think, for generations to come, the opportunity for our country to continue to grow over and over and over again. And people who sit there and say, well, the effects of the tax cuts are all over. This economy is going to start to go south. My comment to you is, no, they just begun. Number one, if you look at the a graph of how tax cuts actually work, the first year you actually wind up with a sort of a flat line on tax cuts because it takes a while for the money to get flowing back into the economy and actually start taking effect. It's the second year when the tax cuts actually kick in. And people have to realize this isn't like a stimulus package where it's a one-time shot. The tax cuts are permanent. They every year you get the same amount of money that's left in people's pockets, that's left in businesses' accounts so they can spend it. And every year that amount of money is like another tax cut, another stimulus package. It just keeps boosting the economy. And so as long as that tax cut stays in place, those dollars continue to flow and flow around the economy, you're going to continue to have growth. We've had cheap oil prices. That's another thing. You go to the pump. I think yesterday I bought some gas. I think it's about 50 cents lower than what it was late last fall. That leaves more money in people's pockets again. So even though it's kind of like a tax cut in that people get to keep their money. So I think we're in for some good times. I think that this jobs report is just another indication of the continued strength of the economy, the continued strength of the president's programs, and the times where if we allow this economy to continue to do what it's doing, it's going to continue to grow, provide the revenues that can fund the government and hopefully get us out of this debt and deficit problem as well.
All right. Unemployment, the level remained the same, and that's also good news, isn't it?
Yeah, there's so many more people coming into the workforce. The number I always like to look at is what they call the U6 number. That's the number of unemployed drawing a check, unemployed people not drawing a check, and people who have given up looking for work, and the people who are employed but only working part time. And that number keeps coming down. It's in the low 7% now. So that number tells you how many people are actually out there that are capable of being in the workforce and could be employed full time. Part of that number, obviously, is part timers. But that's a number that tells you, as it continues to come down, that tells you the workforce is continuing to grow. And the people who are out there looking for work or capable of working is going down. So that's a really good indication that we've got a growing economy again, one that provides the kind of jobs that people want to go do and can make money at and provide a living for their families. So I think all these numbers are good. As I said, Kudlow and the economic people with the Biden administration are just almost giddy with the way things are going. There's going to be months up and down because of weather shuts down, the stock market scares, whatever it is. But as you look at the trend line, for the entire year, you're going to continue to see 3% growth. I think this coming year, as you go through the entire year. So I'm excited about it. I'm really happy for our citizens, my constituents. They're going to be able to have some dollars in their pocket to be able to take care of the needs of their families and the business, be able to invest in themselves and hire more people. And that's what this country's all about, is economic freedom to allow people to be able to do those things. And so As you can tell, I'm pretty pumped up about it.
Congressman Blaine Luchtenmayer is our guest, and we need to talk a little bit about the flooding. Obviously, a lot of the devastation is in your colleague Congressman Graves' district, but it's impacted the entire state. What are your thoughts, first of all, on what we've seen and the impact it's had?
Yeah, I've got about half of Missouri that goes across the state, and right now that part of it is the water's up and in some low places, but I think there's some more water coming, so we're going to perhaps have some more devastation. I've got part of the Mississippi River also all the way around St. Louis, and so far there's some flooding there, but not devastating flooding. So we're hopeful that this can all be lived through, but I was listening to a report on it last night, and they talked like there was about four times the amount of rainfall in the watershed area of the Missouri River than what is normal for a year. So no matter, some folks are all upset with the Army Corps of Engineers, and while they have their faults, I'm not defending them here. When you have four times the amount of normal rainfall or water in an area over a period of time, that's just a recipe for disaster. There's nothing you can do about that. There's ways probably to mitigate some of it, but it still is a horrible situation. And I know I have a daughter who lives in Denver, and I was talking also to a good colleague of mine out in Idaho about the snow amounts of or the amounts of snow they've gotten out there this winter. And they've had an inordinate amount of snow out there as well. They've got a huge snowfall this winter. So when that all melts, that is going to add to the problem, and we're set up for, again, the same problem we had back in 2011 when we had extraordinary snowfall in the mountains. It all melted at one time, and then they had a great big rainstorm come over that entire watershed area and dump several inches on top of that, and we had the flood of 2011. So right now the flooding is comparable to that north. From where we are here in central Missouri. But it could be even worse if we happen to have another rain event on top of the snow melt when it occurs. So it's going to be a long spring, and I know that Governor Parson and some of the other governors up north are concerned and started to talk to the Corps about trying to do something different. I know Sam and I have worked on this issue for 10 years, and after the flood of 11, we finally got our colleagues north of Iowa and Nebraska here to realize that flooding had to be the number one priority, and the Corps had to change the way they were managing the reservoirs up there to be able to do that. But I will tell you, one of the big problems that they have is that they have to manage also for the ecological and environmental stuff that they've gotten sued for over the years. The environmental folks have taken the Corps to court over various ways that they've operated the flows and have won, and as a result these court cases have really screwed up the way that the Corps has been managing this. But I think the Corps is going to have to push back, and Sam and I have been pushing them for years, and they finally agreed after the 2011 flood that they do have to think differently about how they do this, and they do have to prioritize for flooding because of the loss of life and property. And so they have been doing that, and the environmentalists have backed off a little bit on that, realizing that they're going to lose that one big time if they take that to court. So that's kind of a little bit of a background on it. It's a whole lot more complicated than that, but that's kind of just some top of the line stuff about how this whole thing fits together. But I can tell you, Sam and I work together very closely on these river issues because it's very impactful. The lower half from like St. Joe on down, we want to make sure that there's enough water flows for barge traffic to go up and down the river, because it's important for that. That's a huge tributary and a huge water highway, so to speak. For our farmers and other manufacturers along there to be able to have goods and services to go up and down that river, and you've got to have enough flow to be able to do that. So, the Corps is in a bind to be able to allow enough water to flow through for navigation, but don't let too much flow through because of the people up north want it for recreation. So, you have to also take care of your environmental needs. So they're in a box, and when you have a huge water event like we've just had, it screws it all up, and so everybody's mad.
This may segue into that discussion we've had before about the infrastructure proposal. Do we need to get this whole infrastructure package through and updated so we can talk more about the river traffic?
Yeah, a big part of the infrastructure packages are the locks and dams to be repaired and rebuilt, especially on the Mississippi. Now, there's some ports that we're working on the Missouri that are there's a couple of new ports that want to be put in because they believe that the barge traffic is something that can and will be able to be done on the river as the Corps learns better how to manage it. But part of the infrastructure package is going to have some money in it for the locks and dams on the Mississippi. They are just literally falling apart. They need to be improved. They need to be repaired. They also need to be enlarged. They're not big enough to allow the kind of barges that go up and down the Mississippi today to allow that to happen versus the way they used to. And used to, it was, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 barges at a time. Now there's been 10 or 20 at a time, and the barge and the locks and dams are not big enough to accommodate those. So it's important we upgrade those things, get them to where they can be operated safely, as well as enlarge them to be able to accommodate the new barge traffic the way it actually occurs today.
All right, let's turn the topic a little bit south. What is going to be happening along the border with Mexico? What's the president going to do?
Well, this morning he came out and said he's going to give Mexico a year to straighten up and help stop the flow of this stuff, or else he's going to shut it down. And I'm surprised, quite frankly, that he did that. He usually doesn't back off, but apparently he's seen or has been in some negotiations with Mexico to a certain extent, because I know earlier in the week they actually did stop and close their borders and on the southern area to keep those folks from Central America from coming up. So I think he took that as a show of good faith and said, all right, if you're willing to work with me, I'm willing to work with you, but you're going to have to get serious about it. So he's going to give him a year to help work on his problem. Otherwise, he will shut down the border. And if he does that, when he does that, he's going to raise the tariffs on automobiles, which would be devastating to Mexico. That is one of their main industries next to agriculture. So if he closes down their automobile stuff, it will be absolutely devastating to Mexico. And that got their attention. So, you know, there truly is a crisis at the border here, Bob. There, you know, they're right at 100,000 people a month now are coming across that border. I got some numbers here just recently, you know, some of this, and it just blows your mind. You know, we're looking at 4 million in the last 2 years. We've had almost 4 million pounds of drugs that have been seized at the ports around the country, not just all of Mexico here, but all. But there's been 11 million that's been seized between these ports. So that tells you the need for the walls. You know, there's 266 criminal arrests in the last 2 years. But, you know, even at the Mexican border, there's over 400,000 pounds just in the last year of marijuana that was seized, 10,000 pounds of cocaine that was seized, 3,600 terrorists stopped, 6,000 gang members stopped. I mean, that's the ones they stopped. How much came through without these borders? And what's happening is this talk of closing the border is what's causing a lot of this extra rush to get through the border before the walls close. That tells you how this system is actually going to be able to be worked. The citizens south of our country here know that once that wall goes up, they can't get in. And so the wall actually is, you know, the threat up and the building of the wall right now is actually causing these people to come north, knowing that they better get across now or they won't be able to do it later. So the wall works. That's part of a whole program. But the president, he sees these numbers. He sees the people that are affected by this. You know, Bob, right here in our own area in central Missouri, we had an illegal alien that killed somebody. If you remember 3 years ago, the guy from from Kansas City, Kansas, who had been picked up and deported 3 or 4 times and jailed out in California. He slipped back into country, was in Kansas City, Kansas. ICE was supposed to pick him up 3 times, didn't do it. And he turns around, kills 3 people, steals a truck, runs across Missouri, runs out of gas, and on I-70, gets out of his truck and kills somebody at a nearby house. Now, that brings it home. This is not just a border crisis. This is a national crisis that we've got to get our hands around to be able to stop this. This is impacting the sovereignty of our country. We can't allow this to happen. I'm as empathetic to people who are trying to flee their country because of the government they have, but they've got to do it the right way. The bill that we passed back in March, April, May, February sometime, whatever it was, had some money in there to be able to allow judges to be able to go to these Central American countries and have these people apply for asylum in their countries rather than have to come all the way to our border. So therefore, if there's a legitimate case of asylum, it could be done there rather than have them trek all the way and endanger themselves. I think I may have told the story before, but I had a friend of mine who went to the border recently and was talking to a farmer there. And he said, look, I've got some cameras all over my farm. And he said, there's about 10,000 people a year come across my farm. And it's not unusual to find a body out there. This is truly a crisis, and we have got to get our hands around it. And the president is doing the best he can with the resources that he has and the obstructionist activities of the Democrats with regards to not letting him try to do his job. So, I mean, I can talk all day on this. It's just, it's a real, real big problem that people have to understand. We have got to fix. We have to fix this.
All right. Can you address the question that we often get from people who say, hey, we don't need a wall. And even if we have one, people are going to go under it. They're going to go over it. It just doesn't work. Well, is the point that where there is a wall now, it is working?
Yeah, that's the point. I said, if you look at a prison that has walls, do prisoners ever get out? Yeah. Sometimes they crawl in, under, out. They run and jump in a truck and hide in there and you get out. It's not foolproof, but the bottom line is it's a deterrent. It will deter them from coming in, and I can tell you from talking to my colleagues who are congressmen at represent areas along the border, because I've asked the question to them. I said, tell me, do walls work? And he said, anywhere you place there is a deterrent, they work, whether it's a wall, a physical wall, whether it's a patrol that patrols it regularly to deter people from coming across. They will go someplace where the path of least resistance is. So, yes, walls work. Is it the total answer? No. But it is part of the answer to solving this problem. And even a lot of the Democrats admit that it is part of the answer. They just are the ones that you see on TV that rail against it are the focal minority folks, the standpoint of the voices there who don't get that there is part of this that has to be done with the wall. But, the president's right. He knows that He's got an all-encompassing plan. He went to the Border Patrol, Homeland Security, and said, give me a plan on how to address this. And I think there was 5 or 6 points to it. And one of the points was a border wall. Well, the Democrats agree on the other 5, but they don't want to have to build a wall just for political reasons. This isn't about policy. This is about politics. And so as a result, they're fighting him on the wall portion. Now, they agree on the other parts of it. Whether you need more border patrol and you need more detention beds and you need more training and you need more technology along the border, well, all those things are fine, and I support them 100%, and those things were approved. But when it comes to the wall, nope, they want to draw a line. They want to have they don't want that wall to go up because they just think it's a political issue, and really, they see it as Trump winning. Because the president ran on a wall back in 2016. He continues to harp on this wall, and they believe if they can keep him from getting a wall, they win a political victory. That's what it's all about.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back with more from Congressman Blaine Lucemeyer in just a moment.
What's going on at the Y? Well, it's time to register for summer day camp. The summer day camp program is for children in kindergarten through 5th grade. It runs Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. till 6 p.m. Summer camp begins on May 28th. Be sure to register now. For more information, contact the Y at 660-263-3600. The Randolph Area YMCA for youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility.
Are you ready for some football? Secure your Mizzou football 2019 season tickets now with exciting matchups against West Virginia, South Carolina, Ole Miss for homecoming, Florida, and Tennessee. New discounted ticket packages allow you to purchase a reserve season ticket for just $199. Help Mizzou football make it right. Renew or request your tickets today at mutigers.com or call 1-800-CATPAWS. Renewal deadline is Saturday, April 13th, same day as the annual Black and Gold Spring Game at 3 p.m. We'll see you at the Zoo.
Congressman Blaine Lucemeyer, I guess I don't know you're Republican, so I'm going to ask you a question that's probably not completely fair, but I'd ask it even if the situation was reversed. There's 10 to 12 to 14 Democrats who have already announced that they are going to be running for president. Why in the world would that happen, that many?
Well, obviously they believe the president's vulnerable. They see some of the numbers against him. They believe that the continual attacks will weaken him enough that there's an opportunity to run and win. But the interesting part is they seem to be tacking as far left as they can get, which is not where the American people are. So they're not they haven't positioned themselves to win the general. They're trying to position themselves to win the primary. And so it's interesting dynamic to see all this. But, they truly believe the president is wrong in a lot of his policies and the way he's the direction of the country, which I don't know why you would like where the direction of the country is, because, my goodness sakes, we've got a booming economy, and it looks like it's headed for good stuff for a long time. We've actually got a safer world as a result of what he's doing. We've got, North Korea no longer shooting around, rockets over there all over the place. Liable hit somebody with them one of these days. You got the NATO agreement that's been strengthened as a result of his leadership. I mean, the list of successes is endless, but they're trying to go after him based on his personality, which sometimes is not something that people appreciate very much. But that's just him. That's just his way of doing business. He's from New York. You ever been to New York? I mean, he's a typical New Yorker. He'd rather argue with you than talk to you. They just believe that he's weak, that there's an opportunity. And, the issues they're seizing on, it just really kind of is interesting, because they want, they're out here touting socialism. They have embraced infanticide, which is basically murdering a child at the point of birth. They have embraced that. The new Green New Deal, which is something that will destroy. It's got a $93 trillion price tag to it. It's something that will destroy the economy thoroughly. And, I mean, and they're so over the top on this that, they're and so invested that they can't back up from it. The other day, though, in the Senate, they had a vote on the Green New Deal, and they all voted present. They're really afraid to show the American people where they're really at. But on their, when you go talk to their own constituents on the left side of the spectrum, they're out there throwing all these great things out there like socialism and Green New Deal and infanticide. But when it comes time to talk to the rest of the people, the other two-thirds of the country, they're trying to hide their views again. And so you'll see that play out over the next several months. But, they think the president's weak. They see an opening, and they're trying to go for it.
All right, we've got about 2 minutes left in the program. I don't think either one of us put a whole lot of stock in polls, but one that we did see recently, more and more young people seem to be pro-life. Do you see that as a good sign?
Yeah, it is. I think, to me, that's a very, very basic value. Whenever you value life, that means you value a lot of the things that go into that. You believe that the people have worth, that work has worth. You believe that, you treat people in a certain way. You treat them respectfully. Whenever you disrespect life, when you don't believe in life, I mean, there's a whole different set of values, I believe, that people have that I think are destructive to our economy and our country, that are not the values that our country was based on. De Tocqueville, who was a French historian, came over and was asked to research why America was great back in the 1830s. And he came back and said, America was great because of the churches that they have who gave the country a system of values upon which those values were the basis for this country to be able to grow and live. And I think pro-life values, pro-life represents those values that are what make us special and make us special here in the heartland. We're the people here in the heart, in the center of the country, who hold this country together with our value system.
All right. Hey, a minute left. What's the weekend hold for you?
Oh, I've got some meetings tomorrow as well. I've got a Lincoln Day tomorrow night in one of my counties, and I've got to meet with the ladies group tomorrow morning, and I've got another breakfast with some folks tomorrow morning, so I've got a busy weekend here.
All right, one thing people don't realize, and I'll end with this, when you go out to all these meetings and that, and it's a breakfast, a lunch, or a dinner, there's so much talking going on, a lot of time you don't get to eat, do you?
No, I usually eat before I get there, so because when I sit down, people want to talk to you, which is great. That's why I'm there, to talk to folks. And so I just kind of munch around a little bit on my food and make sure I eat enough to be able to, people don't think I don't like their food, but I still get a chance to eat a whole lot.
All right. Hey, have a great weekend. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
All right. Congressman Blaine Lukemire, he's joined us today for his monthly interview as part of Quicksland This Morning.